Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. And I think we need to add in there, I'm a proponent of love.
Okay. That's not a bad thing.
A lover of love. You know, because I think that it we don't spend enough time paying attention to love. But fortunately, since tomorrow's Valentine's Day, I have an excuse to kind of wax on about love and the importance of maintaining those love relationships in our life. Because I imagine that you're probably going to do something romantic for Valentine's Day.
Well, I have a question. Okay. If you do something that's super romantic, but the calendar says it's February 11th, does that count?
Well, it was a really nice thing to do on February 11th, but no.
Okay, so we still got to do something on the 14th.
Well, okay, so here's my thought, because my husband and I are driving up to Las Vegas tomorrow on Valentine's Day to see the band Chicago in concert, because it was the first concert I ever saw when I was a kid, when I was 12. So I have all these fond memories. And so we thought that'd be a romantic, fun thing to do. But the concert is on Friday night. So for my husband, tomorrow is Wednesday. That still is Valentine's Day. He's still on the hook for something.
Even though you're going to spend the majority of the day crossing the Mojave Desert.
Yes, we will. So it can be, I don't know what form Valentine's Day will take in a car ride across the desert.
There's a lovely cafe in Baker.
Is there?
Yeah.
Well, I love the drive. We have great conversations. I mean, I always recommend to couples who, you know, don't get enough time together or have a lot of things they need to talk about is to get in the car and take a long road trip, because it gives you a chance to hash out. You know, you get through all the junk that you haven't dealt with for a long time, maybe have a few arguments, but then you have long enough to kind of come out the other side, enjoy the scenery, and kind of look forward to the event, wherever you're going. And for us, you know, I like going out and hiking around the desert. It's going to be nice and cool, and we have the concert to look forward to. And so I'm really excited about it. But tomorrow is Valentine's Day, and I will be sad if there is not some sort of heart-shaped something.
Okay, I'll write that down.
Yeah, so make sure you head out to CVS after the show.
Because we did like very kind of the same thing. We drove up to the Bay Area and saw a musical group that we really like and very romantic. They're a married couple that have been performing together 40 years, and they're all about love.
And their name?
Tuck and Patty.
There you go.
And, yeah, so we're groupies of theirs, and we love their show, and they had a very intimate performance in Napa. And they took questions from the very small, you know, probably 40 people in the crowd. And it was just
that's
very
like a
romantic.
Private show. That's,
yeah, yeah.
Could have been in your house.
Yep.
That's really romantic. But tomorrow you will continue.
CVS, okay.
But, you know, and every year we do a Valentine's Day show, and I talk about how important it is to really be active in love, because we tend to get very complacent with our love relationships, our intimate relationships. You know, when you talk to couples who are busy with work or raising children or, you know, pursuing different activities or passions, that we have this idea that once we've kind of locked down that love relationship, that intimate partnership, that now it's done and we can push it aside. And then we just kind of go about our business. And then one day we realize, oh, I'm not feeling those same feelings for this person. I guess our love died. But love doesn't die. It just stops being nurtured. And so even if you're pretty laissez-faire and blasé about love all year round, it's really important to every now and then put some action into the words, to really get behind the act of loving someone, taking them something special, or, you know, honoring them with a sonnet or whatever it is, rubbing their feet, just talking to them, going for something that connects you, because love is a verb. You know, it's an action. It has to be tended to. So, you know, I talk about it every year. So I decided that this year I am not going to give up on love, but I'm going to stop kind of beating on this idea for all the curmudgeons who call it a Hallmark holiday and don't want to have to bother with chocolates and being romantic, or that say the same thing, but I do romantic things every day, or I do a nice thing, you know, I did something a month ago. It's like, no, it's nice to have like that day. It's kind of like your birthday or your anniversary. There's something about that day, taking the time to honor it, that keeps those sparks going. But I won't beat that subject, I promise. I kind of thought that we should go another direction with our Valentine's Day show. And I thought that we would focus on those relationships we have with loved ones who have passed. And what happens when someone dies and we are filled with all that love we've had for them, where does that love go? You know, in our grieving culture, quite often we'll say to people, you need to move on, get over it, move on, start a new life, you know, do different things. And we kind of imply that when someone dies, part of our grieving process is to let that love go. But really, research shows that it's much healthier for people to be able to continue actively loving those who have died and passed on, to find ways to continue working with that love we felt for them. Because, you know, that love, again, that feeling that we have, it sustains us. It's why we're here on the planet. And we don't want to let go of that love. And quite often, people won't allow the grieving process to happen. They kind of shut down. They won't allow themselves to feel the sadness or depression or anger that comes with grief because they don't want to let go of the love that they had with that person. And so if we were to rethink how we do our grieving process, is not about feeling the sadness and despair and depression, and then at the end we've let go of this person and they kind of become a distant memory. If we were to see grief as a way of honoring that love, because no one grieves unless they deeply loved someone. And that's one of the hallmarks of grief, is that it only follows a deep and committed love relationship. You know, the depth of our grief is equal to the depth of our love. I mean, we can grieve things that we didn't desperately love, but the depth of that grief really is equivalent to the depth of the love. And so if we were able to allow ourselves to go deeply into the grief and feel the sadness and the loss, it would then open up space to transform that love we had with that person in a different way. You know, we talk about this relationship, and when someone dies, the relationship is over. But really, it's not. Because if you look at the definition of a relationship is an association. It's a connection or a link or a tie between loved ones. And so we can choose to continue our relationships in any way that we want to, even after the loved one has passed, even after their death, in spite of the absence of their presence in our life. That relationship itself still continues. For example, you know, when your mother passed away, you continue being her son. Like, that identity of you as her son never changes, and you continue in that role in certain ways. And, you know, if we want to honor that relationship and continue kind of feeling the action of that love you had for your parent or a spouse or a friend, then you change maybe the context of that relationship. Instead of actively getting to be with them in person, you carry on in their behest. You honor their friends. You stay in contact with their friends. You participate in the charities that were important to them. You continue the activities that the two of you enjoy doing together. You stay active in the ways that keeps their legacy and their memory alive. And in that way, you're helping yourself to maintain that love that fulfills our heart. You know, and when you look at relationships, a big piece of our relationships are the caretaking that goes into looking after each other, right? There's that nice piece. If you're committed to someone and deeply involved in a relationship, there's a lot of caretaking that takes place. And so part of our grieving when we've lost a loved one is to realign that relationship and transfer the way we would have been caretaking for that individual and find ways to care for others, do physical tending in other ways, to create opportunities to care for people and their values and their beliefs in ways that your loved one would have if they were still in this world. So when I think about Valentine's Day and the legacy of those that I've loved and lost, and I still think about and I still love, and I want to honor who they are in ways that keep their memory and their being alive, I think Valentine's Day can be a wonderful time for that. If you're not going to get the cheesy Hallmark card or buy the box of candy, maybe it's a time to stop down and think about how you're maintaining that relationship with those who have passed, your loved one who you loved and supported while they were here. Can you continue loving and supporting them once they're gone? Some people, you know, have a bench done in someone's name with their plaque on it and go sit on that bench for the day, or they'll do a scholarship fund or create a fundraiser, or, you know, have write sonnets or something in their name and their memory. I mean, we all find our way to carry that legacy on. But it's unfortunate that in our grieving process, when someone wants to talk about how much they love someone who died, people get a little nervous, you know, like, well, you know, they're dead. You know, if you talk about them in the first person, or that you actively are still engaged in that relationship and honoring their memory, people worry that you haven't gone through the grieving process, that you somehow haven't let go, or you haven't accepted that they've died. And so we have this pressure in our society that when someone dies, we need to let them leave our lives. And so in order to maintain that memory, sometimes it becomes very private, something we don't tell other people for fear that they might judge us or think we're crazy. And if you talk to elderly people whose, you know, spouse has died, for they've been married for many, many years, they quite often will talk about still having conversations with their deceased spouse, and that they have a conversation back and forth, that their presence still feels very alive in their house and very much a part of their life. But God forbid they tell anybody that they're having those conversations for fear that, you know, someone starts to worry about their mental health and well-being. But there's a lot of research that corroborates this idea that when someone we're close to dies, that we can still feel them in certain ways. I mean, did you have that experience at all, that, you know, that after your mom passed, that you could feel her?
Not so much that I could feel her, but I still, there were moments when I momentarily forget about it. Like I do something exciting for the weekend and, oh, I got to tell my mom about that. And I go, oh yeah, can't do that. But, and I don't necessarily talk to her, but I do think about her reaction and how she'd think about certain things that I'm going through and what advice she would give me on difficult situations.
So it's still her voice is still active. Sure. In your mind. And yeah, that carrying on in the legacy that she would have wanted you to live your life, that becomes very active in our lives. That emotional bond really doesn't die. It doesn't go away. It remains vibrant. And we get to choose how we want to continue transforming that relationship that we had with the person who passed, learning how to carry on the love with our deceased loved one in ways that are different. We learn to weave their values and beliefs and interests into our new life. Our love for them remains a living part of our experience, and it's a way we can transform grief into being something that we don't dread. No one really wants to go through grief at all, but grief really is the ultimate end of a deep, loving relationship. So if we don't dread the grief, and we can embrace the grief as an opportunity to transform that love relationship we had with someone we cared deeply about, it will help us to move through that process and come out with a different sense of who we are. So for today's show, instead of talking about the box of chocolate and the candy bars, I thought I would put it out there. How do you maintain your love and relationships with a deceased loved one? Do you think about them and maintain that relationship? Do you carry their memory with you? Do you talk to them? Do you honor them? What have you done to honor them? Have you created any rituals or a way of remembering them in their honor? And I'd also be curious to know if you ever sense their presence around you. You sense them still being in some form in your life. That's where I thought we would go today. I also have a guest in the studio who actually inspired today's show. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and we will invite you to be a part of the program. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab, and you can always subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts. Search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and the shows will be uploaded to your phone. So I'm looking forward to this conversation today. I'm looking forward to speaking with our guest, and I look forward to your phone calls, and we'll be back in a moment to get started.
The sky was dark this morning when I raised my head. I stood at the window, the darkness was my bane. Suddenly a sunbeam thrilled me to my weary heart. It was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen. I knew I had to keep my love alive. keep my love alive.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And my guest today is Amber Peterson. How
Hello.
You doing, Amber?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. And Amber is really the inspiration for today's show, because I probably would have just done another corny let's love each other on Valentine's Day show. But Amber took the time to write an email, send a note into the station, talking about her best friend, Bryn Frace, who was killed in a car accident with her sister, Brittany. And Bryn was an avid NPR listener, listened since she was in high school, loved the station so much. And so Amber reached out saying, you know, I want to honor my friend in a way that's positive and not something about sadness. And NPR is something that she absolutely loved. And would you be willing to let me come in and talk about my friend Bryn? And so I was immediately struck by that as such a great idea, because when we're grieving, and there's been a lot of grieving on the Central Coast from fires and mudslides and loss of life and death. I mean, there's been a lot of people who are feeling a lot of heartache at this time. And so instead of focusing on the traditional Valentine's Day cupids and hearts and arrows, I thought, let's focus this Valentine's Day on keeping those memories of love alive and the people who matter most to us. So Amber, I appreciate your courage in coming on, because I know this was something you had to think hard about.
Yeah, but it's funny, because the day after Bryn passed, I thought of so many things. How can I honor her? And one of the first things that popped into my head was NPR. And I was like, why am I thinking of NPR right now? But Bryn, yeah, since high school, she listened almost every day. She would listen in the car with her dad. She would listen on runs. And she always came to me with new information and new news and how excited she was to hear something on NPR. So, it was one of the first things that came to my mind. And I know that she's listening now, and I think she's probably so excited to just be with me here today. And I'm so happy to be here. So thank you.
So Amber, you and Bryn and Brittany all went to Atascadero High School.
Yeah. So
go Greyhounds.
yeah. They actually live in Paso, but they did go to Atascadero High School. And Bryn and I both graduated in 2014, and Brittany was 2 years younger than us.
So tell me about your friendship with Bryn. How did you meet, and why was this friendship so special to you?
Well, Bryn and I first met in the eighth grade. We were in a math class together, and Bryn and I are both, we love math, we're math nerds, so we sort of connected on that level. And then we didn't become really close until high school, but it was just, we both had this similar views of the world, and we were both super silly and weird, and we could be just ourselves together. And I remember just feeling like, wow, this girl is, like, I feel already so close to her. And we hadn't even spent that much time together. And then I remember we'd have sleepovers almost every weekend. I'd be in Paso, she'd be coming to my house. And then every summer, you know, we couldn't drive our first summer after freshman year. So I remember just, we would walk as far as we could from her house, just finding every adventure possible, and just having, like, the greatest of times. And so we've been best friends since freshman year of high school. And after we went off to college, it was, still we're close.
Where did you both end up going?
So Bryn first went to Humboldt, and I was in Colorado. And we both aren't super big on communication through phone. So we didn't chat every day. We weren't sending each other text messages, but every time we would come home, we knew, okay, we're going to see each other, and we're going to catch each other up on everything in life. And it was just back to normal every time we saw each other.
It's amazing when you can just pick up that conversation as if you'd seen each other the day before.
Yes, and that was how our friendship was. And, just the best of times together. And I knew, I mean, some of my happiest memories are with her. And just growing up and seeing her become that the amazing woman that she was, I'm just so proud to be her friend. So
when you were in high school, did you talk about going to college at the same place, or did you both celebrate taking off in different directions?
And no, I think we're both, I call ourselves like wandering souls. We wanted to go discover new things, and we both love nature. So that's why kind of I was drawn to Colorado and Bryn was drawn up to Humboldt. But Bryn ended up actually transferring to Chico to be with her sister because they were the closest of any siblings I've ever seen. So she went to Chico. She actually transferred this fall, so the past fall semester.
And what was she studying?
She was studying civil engineering.
Environmental
and civil engineering, yes. So it's funny because I actually was an environmental engineering in Colorado at the beginning. And then I switched majors to forestry. And Bryn switched from business to engineering. And I just remember being so happy for her because I know she hated business so much. And she just fit in that engineering department. And she was so excited to get her career started. And it was just so exciting to watch her kind of find those passions.
And so between school years, freshman, sophomore year, did you come home for the summers? Were you able to hang out together?
Yeah, we both came home for Thanksgiving break, always winter break, and then summer. So we saw each other during all of those periods. And then last winter, we went on a backpacking trip together, which was like the highlight of my year. Our friend group, and we're all a pretty tight-knit friend group.
From high school?
Yes, from high school. And we went backpacking in Joshua Tree, and that was Bryn's second time backpacking. And it was my first time backpacking in almost like 10 years. So it was, one of the happiest memories that I have with her of, you know, we were both in college. We just finished stressful semesters, and we came home, and we just got to go into the wild and have a good time together. We did always make time for each other when we were home.
And that's what I think is such a testament to strong friendships, is that bond doesn't change through distance or time.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I struggle with my students to convince them, that they don't need to text 24/7 all of their friends back at home to stay close to them, or to contact their parents every day to be close to them, that the bond of friendship and love is deeper than a text message or even a FaceTime call.
It is.
It goes someplace deeper in you.
And it's always there. It's always there. And even with her passing, that friendship is still there. You're never losing that. You're never losing that love. And it's just a matter of, you know, are you willing to hold on to it and to keep it? And we both were, yeah. So it was always, we'd see each other after not seeing each other for 6 months. And it would just be like, we need to catch each other up on everything. And it was just back to normal and back to being best friends again. So
what are some of the things that you most enjoyed doing together? You talked about backpacking, but what was it about this friendship that was so unique with Bryn? You know, because, and this is kind of an aside, but I read an article this morning briefly that talked about a school district, a school that's talking about trying to eliminate BFFs to discourage children from having best friends because they think that it socially isolates them. And that's a whole other show and topic, but I was thinking about how profound that moniker, that best friend feeling is. And what did that mean for you? How did you know that your relationship with Bryn was that BFF as opposed to just another one of your friend group?
It was just, I just felt comfortable around her. It was the fact that we could just sit in silence and feel completely okay with that. And we always spent time, we would go to the beach together a lot. We would just sit. We'd watch the sunsets. We'd go to the beach at night. We just had all these spontaneous, like, trips together. And that was, like, sort of the definition of Bryn, was just, like, this spontaneous joy and love that she carried with her everywhere. And one of my favorite trips that we had was after we graduated high school. we took a road trip to Lake Tahoe where her brother was. And we'd both really never been on a long road trip. My parents were reluctant to let me go. My dad was like, oh, I don't want you taking my car. But I managed to get him to let me take his car. So we just drove that long drive to Tahoe, just jamming out to music, singing, dancing, talking.
Probably not really dancing.
But no. Yeah.
Driving just safely.
Like, you know, shaking around. But never had our cell phones out. We were just there present together, and that's how it was every time I was with Brent.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Amber Peterson. Amber is a graduate of Atascadero High School. She's a college student. She wanted to honor her friend, Bryn. Bryn and her sister, Brittany Frace, passed away in the fall.
They passed away actually about a month ago.
About a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, this is very current. So they both had finished their fall semester at Chico together. And they passed away, a month ago. In a car accident. And I saw Bryn, the last time I saw her physically was January 1st, was New Year's. She was heading to Chico, and she was so excited because she was going to try to find a job. And I remember I made sure to give her a hug and tell her that I loved her. It was a very recent event, and still feeling that aftermath a lot for all of us in this community.
Well, and that's, not to minimize the grief, because today we wanted to honor Bryn's life and talk about all the ways that she was amazing, and her sister Brittany, who I'm sure we'll get to talk about also, and the light and the joy that she brought to your life and to many people's lives, which was your inspiration for contacting. It's like grief is there, the loss, the despair, the anger, the devastation. Like, that's a month into it. It's pretty raw. And for a lot of people in this immediate aftermath of grief, there is that shock too, that part of, I don't really believe that this has happened, so I'm kind of moving forward in ways that I can. So the grief is active, I'm sure, in your life and her family's life and all of her friends' lives, but at the same time that we're grieving, that love is still really strong and needing a voice and wanting a voice. So I wanted to make sure that that it's not as if you have just dealt with your grief and a month later moving on, this is part of your grieving process. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I have never experienced a grief, like a loss this close to me. So I didn't know really what to do. And like you said, there's that initial shock of, is this real? And throughout this whole process, I was comparing my grieving process to, I guess, what I expected was that, like, inconsolable depression and sadness. And that is there, but Bryn brought so much joy and love to my life that's sort of overshadowing everything else. And I'm still going through this grieving process, but I'm doing it knowing that there's so much love there. And so I haven't sunk into that dark hole, and I'm not going to, because she didn't let me do that, and she will continue to not let us sink into that hole.
And if you do, because the therapist in me wants to make sure we are honest about the grieving process, if you do, and you probably will, because it's part of the stages of grieving.
This is very new.
And this is still very new and very raw. When you do, I think what will sustain you is that trust that you'll have to go through that dark to come back into the light again, to be able to transform the relationship, to be able to have these memories that are so alive in you and so powerful in you, and that they will still remain just in different ways, that you'll find, as you already have, ways to keep that love active in the absence of her physical presence. But it's so important to allow ourselves to go through those stages, right? To accept where you are in the process and wherever it takes you, to say, I'm going to just follow this process and trust that my heart and my psyche and my mind will know how to take me out the other side when it's time. And that's why I'm so appreciative of you coming in and being willing to talk today on the air, because it is raw and it's new. And to be able to talk about How you're feeling, I think, is really important, because so many people have the fear of grieving because they expect that if someone dies, I will completely fall apart and I won't be able to function and everything will stop. But that's not been your experience.
No, it's not. And of course, you're going to have those days of just absolute sadness. But I think it's remembering what they brought to your life and remembering that positives and just carrying that with you and continue to live with them. And maybe it's not a physical presence, but it's they are present there. And that's how I feel. And that's sort of been helping me cope. And I think going to those places that we shared all of these great memories has helped me as well. You know, I just sitting out at the beach at Avila, I feel her there, and she's helping me get up and go outside and go for hikes and things like that. And I know her parents as well have been just really going out and doing all the things that they love and what the girls loved, and that's been helping.
Their spirit are not going to allow you to curl up in a ball, because that would not be honoring.
No, it would not be honoring
who they
them.
Were.
Yes, yeah. And they're not allowing us to do that, and we won't. So,
my guest today is Amber Peterson. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and we're looking at an alternative view of Valentine's Day and how we honor and love and maintain the love and relationship with those who have passed on, and how we learn to honor their memory and transform our own lives without the presence of them in our daily life. How do we transform our lives in ways that keeps their memory and legacy living on through us, taking actions or being part of communities or reaching out and caretaking for others in a way that honors the people we love so much? And we look forward to having you be a part of this conversation at 805-781-3875. We'll be back to take your calls. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist, and our number is 805-781-3875. How is it that you honor a loved one who has passed? Have you found a way to maintain that relationship that you had with them, the love you shared with them, in different ways, either through a memorial or rituals or a remembrance of some kind? And I'm also curious to know if you still feel their presence in some way, because so many people talk about experiencing the energy of a lost loved one, either their presence in the room or a sign of some kind or some sort of message that they really feel is connected to that relationship. And so what a great time to think about that act of love we feel even when someone dies, and how nurturing that love inside of ourselves while we're going through the grief process can help us to heal, to help us move forward, and to know that when someone dies, we don't have to bury that love. We don't have to work on trying to get over those feelings, but actually just transform that love into different active ways to honor that person in ways that would honor who they were and their memory. 805-781-3875. So Amber, honor Brittany and Bryn's memories. Tell us about them.
So Bryn and Brittany were sisters and best of friends, and they both radiated the most joy and love of any two people that I know. They were both kind and compassionate and open-minded, adventurous. Bryn was like one of the silliest people I knew. She cared for everyone. She did not have one negative word to say about anyone. And that's really difficult for a lot of people to do. You know, you have these criticisms and these thoughts, but she never said any bad word about anyone. She had these strong passions that just grew as she got older.
For example,
she was a runner. Her and her sister were both runners. And that was their peace. That was how they found peace in running. So running, the environment, they both love nature. They were also quite foodies. They were foodies and cared about their health and about other people's health. And Bryn had a dream of sort of creating sustainable farming techniques and building up sustainable farms. And her favorite place to work, both in Humboldt and Chico, was on their farms there. But yeah, just the kindest and happiest people that I knew. And they always welcomed everyone with open arms. And everyone that I talk to and that knows them just views them the same way we all do, because they were genuine people, genuinely good people.
And so how has knowing them changed you? And it's only been a month, I understand that, but even prior to their passing, how do you feel like knowing Bryn has changed or shaped who you are?
Well, she's really changed my outlook on the way that I view people and the way that I view life, because she lives for herself. She's present in life. We always talked about how a lot of people are doing things because of societal expectations, or they're doing it because it's viewed as what's cool or mm-hmm. what they need to be doing.
Exactly.
And I'm going to speak in terms of our age. But Bryn lived with her passions in mind and with her love in mind, and she was just a genuine – that was just – she was a true soul. Like, it's hard to – describe just how great of a human she was, but
that's okay, and I can see it in your face, because sometimes relationships go beyond words, which makes those relationships
yeah.
even more special, is yeah. that they go without definition, they just are. Our number is 805-781-3875, and we're talking about the alternative Valentine's Day, how to love and honor and maintain that love for someone who may have passed. And Susie, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a widow of 5 years, and I just wanted to share that some of the questions you posed about, you know, do you feel the presence of your loved one?
Mm-hmm.
We'd been married a long time, and he was killed in a car crash. And so I didn't really get to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that it's my real first experience with death, other than losing my parents or some cousins, you know, someone so close to me. It has enriched my life.
Mm.
You know, I feel the loss every day, but the enrichment of my husband's loss has made me very sensitive to other people and other people's feelings, and made me much more aware of all the gifts that we have in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I have journaled a lot since my husband's death, and one of the things that, I mean, I have so very many thoughts that I think about, but there's a line in, I think it's Good Will Hunting, that Robin Williams shares with the young man he's counseling, and he's talking about his wife's death, and he said, you know, you're going to have good times and you're going to have bad times, but this level of loss or death wakes us up to all the things we weren't paying attention to.
So true, that we become almost more aware of what life is.
Yes, yes. And that's what my loss has done for me. It's made me much, much more aware of everything that I wouldn't say I was numb, because after raising our children and having careers and retiring, we were in what I would call the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. As far as our relationship and our lives, the hard work was behind us, and we had just joy. What are we going to do today? You know, mm-hmm. It was just fun. So, but still, I feel that death can enrich our lives, even though it might be hard for people to look at it that way.
And do you feel that you've incorporated some of your husband's attributes or values or beliefs and carried them on in his stead?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's nothing I love better than telling stories or trying to do things the way that he did them. I surround myself with his favorite colors, or, you know, I love telling stories. Every day. His presence is here all the time.
Yeah, the love remains active and vital, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The gifts just keep on giving.
Absolutely. Susie, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story with us today.
Okay. Bye-bye.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Amber Peterson, and she asked me to spend some time remembering her friends Bryn and Brittany Frace, and we decided to open it up and talk about remembering those who have died and are still very much a part of our lives, that grief is one piece of loss. The other piece is the action of love that carries on and transforms our lives once someone has died. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. I thought we had Gloria, but she's not there, so we'll come back to Gloria if you want to call in again, 805-781-3875. And so you mentioned, you know, this idea of energy, and I keep thinking about that also, that when someone dies, you know, and there's a lot of conversations, books and books and books have been written about what happens, but that a lot of people talk about still feeling that presence of the person in some way.
Yeah, so a few weeks ago, one of my friends mentioned the law of conservation of energy. So that's stating that energy is neither created or destroyed. And I look at every living being as this energy. And Bryn and Brittany, their energy may not be in a physical form, but it is still alive. And so they've just taken a new shape. And for me, that's seeing them in, you know, when I'm at the beach and I hear the waves, I feel that energy. When I'm in the car and I'm listening to the jams that Bryn and I would
it's when those songs
out to.
Come
yeah,
out.
When those songs come out too, I feel that energy there, and I talk to them, and it's still alive, and it's still very, very bright.
And it is, and it gives us, as Susie was saying, a new heightened experience within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we're curious to know what your experience has been with the loss of a loved one. And John, are you there? Oh, we'll try again.
Hey,
hi, John, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
There you are. John, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Oh, yeah. You were talking about after people have passed on and sometimes, you know, feeling their presence and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I took care of my parents in the last years of their lives. I moved in with my mother, especially in Southern California. And a couple of things have happened after both of my parents died. And you know, you really want to believe, because you really loved these people, you really want to believe that this really happened and it was very meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about that. In my case, one of the things that happened was I kept my mother's clock, and I hung it in my own kitchen. And the battery would last for years, but this last time the battery went dead, it went dead on my mother's birthday. So, and then in my father's case, it was around Christmas time, and we had a funeral for him before Christmas. And one of the Christmas tree bulbs suddenly flew across the room one evening. And that one's more of a stretch. But what are your thoughts about, you know, these kinds of occurrences. I mean, people want to believe them, but what?
Well, and it's interesting because we are such a postmodern society with this belief that science has the answers for all things, right? That we have been told for the last 50 years that we should put all of our trust in science, that anything that we can't measure and tangibly understand can't possibly be of value. But that's a social construct. And I'm not saying that science isn't real and that it doesn't matter, but it's one piece of knowing ourselves in the world, right? One way of understanding what our life is all about. And so I think that we do ourselves a disservice with a full just embracing of science being the only answer to life's mysteries, because there are too many things that go unexplained.
Well, yes, as my mother used to quote Shakespeare about, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. I can't tell you how many times she used to say that.
Mm-hmm. And isn't life much more interesting not knowing everything? Isn't life much more interesting being able to feel and sense and trust those things that we might not be able to explain away, but that give our life peace or joy?
And well, I'm there with you on that for sure.
And I think from a psychotherapist's perspective, you know, anything that gives us a sense of grounding and well-being is good for us. And if those signs and those messages and those connections and that sense of presence gives us a sense of peace and wholeness, then we embrace that. Because if you look at all of the progress we supposedly have made in dealing with mental health issues, our collective mental health has gotten worse. You know, the more we have decided that everything about mental health is associated to the brain and that science needs to fix it, we have not improved people's mental health. So I'm all about this idea of broadening our understanding about what gives us good mental health and how we tap into those things that aren't explainable, but absolutely help us to heal and feel better.
Yes. Thank you.
I hope that helps. Thank you for calling in and broaching the conversation. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about alternatives to how we see Valentine's Day, because it's so easy to blow off Valentine's Day. It's just the Hallmark holiday, and we buy cards and we get chocolate. And this does not get my husband off the hook by any means, because I absolutely do believe that it's important to take days that are special and to mark those occasions as special, just as we look at birthdays and anniversaries. And with the passing of a loved one, those special anniversaries of their life, their birthdays, and even the day that they passed, to keep those days and those memories alive, the action of that love, because we are love beings and love is an energy. If we're going to just throw the whole idea of energies out there, love is not static. Mm-hmm. It moves through us. We feel it in different ways. And so to nurture those loving feelings we have to work with them, whether it's planting a tree in someone's honor or giving someone a hug or sitting on their favorite bench. You know, that the actions of loving someone are good for our mental health and well-being. And so I so appreciate, you know, Amber taking the time to reach out, you know, only a month after her friends have passed and saying, I need to take an action. I need to do something. I'm feeling like I need to do something to honor my friends. And we'd love you to be part of the conversation. 805-781-3875. What is your experience keeping your love activated with someone who has passed? Or how do you remember them? And do you still feel their presence? And so, Amber, moving kind of forward, I know you don't, you know, a month into, you don't know where you're going to be a year from now, but you started off the conversation before and they were talking about how you were going to school in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And due to some health issues, ended up coming home last March and have kind of had a reset for yourself. Yeah. So where are you now, almost a year after kind of having some big life changes and going through the changes, losing your friends? Where do you see yourself going from here?
Oh yeah, it's been a big change. You know, I had this plan, but I've realized that, you know, you can't plan everything in life.
No.
And it's really only detrimental. So now I'm hoping to finish university in 2 years. So who knows where I'll be in the fall, but I'll be somewhere hopefully finishing school with my degree of natural resource management and forestry. And with Bryn's passing, it's really only motivated me more because she and I shared that love for the earth and that desire to want to help as much as we could. So it's really only driving me more to finish what I've always wanted to do. So I'll be finishing up university hopefully in the next 2 years and then moving on. But it's, you know, anything can happen.
You know, I guess you start to learn to accept life's mysteries.
Yes,
a little more,
yes,
when you start off
mysteries,
right?
Yeah.
When you have that life plan that you had going off to college, and then mm-hmm. through illness coming home, and then losing your friend. It's a lot to take on at a young age. You're young. It's a lot to have to carry. I'm sure also because most of your friends haven't dealt with anything as hard, whether it's even a health issue that brings you home or the loss of a best friend. And so you find yourself kind of moving away from people who can't understand any longer mm-hmm. what you're experiencing or what you've been through. And, you know, I lost my two closest friends in high school and college also. And I remember thinking, I'm in a club that I did never wanted to be a member of. You know, I felt like I was kind of alone in this experience. But then I also recognized that the friendships I made from that point forward were much different. They were much deeper. They were much more rich because I only could relate to people who had had similar loss because we understood each other. We were at that level immediately. Hi, Danielle. Thanks for waiting.
Hi,
you're on
there.
The air. What's on your mind?
Uh-huh. Well, I was actually driving my car, and I had to pull over. This is the first time I've ever done this, but I really am enjoying listening to your program.
Thank you.
And 32 years ago, I lost my husband and daughter. They were killed in a car wreck with a drunk driver. And I learned such a valuable lesson from that, and I rejoice all the time. And it sounds odd, but I rejoice that I was able to learn so much from the death of losing my family. So,
And what can you think of one specific thing that changed about you over the years?
Yes, I appreciate every day. It was kind of an odd thing. He was leaving early for a holiday to visit his family, and I had to work. And it was just sort of, okay, goodbye, and, you know, hurry up, I'm in a hurry. And the lesson I learned was every day should be special. And when I hear people say, gosh, I can't wait for this day to end, I just want to wrap my arms around them and say, you know, it just may, and don't wish that. Mm. Just maybe say your life is a little different or your day is a little different, but never wish your day away. Try not to take advantage or take for granted when people care for you. Mm-hmm. And, and I also fight kind of a seasonal depression around the holidays. I feel very sad and I feel lost. And then all of a sudden I can feel the presence of my husband and daughter saying, you know, you're not celebrating our life by this. Mm. You know, you need to honor our lives and not feel so sad, but honor it.
You know, Well, I say in some ways you're living three people's lives and not just your own. It's not just about you, right? You've got three people's lives that you want to make the most of.
That's right. And, I mean, I miss them every day, and it's been a long time. And mm-hmm. I used to feel bad about that, like, gosh, get over it, Danielle. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, no, it's okay to feel that way. It's all right to honor them and remember them. And so it's sort of a, you know, I came to terms with saying it's okay to miss people that you love.
Yes, and to continue loving them.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Danielle, thank you for taking time to call. And thank you for pulling over and being safe. I appreciate that as well.
All right. Thank you so much.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we'll take one more quick call. Susan, what's on your mind?
Well, I had a similar experience of losing a good friend during college, a good high school friend, my best friend. And one thing I've done is I've stayed connected with her parents. So for over 50 years, I've connected with them every Christmas. And I recently had a chance to connect with her older sister, who said how important that had been to them, that they got to kind of, in a way, live her life through my life and seeing what, you know, what their daughter's life might have been if she had lived, and enjoying my children and grandchildren. And the other thing is that the friends we had in high school have stayed really connected. In fact, I'm getting together with some of them in a few weeks, and, you know, we've been lifelong friends since high school, and we still get together. So I think that's been a way of honoring our friend's memory.
And she became kind of the glue that kept you all together when you might have just gone your separate ways and never really looked back.
Right, right.
It becomes that.
So she was a special person to all of us. So.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Susan. Thank you for calling in and sharing that. And Amber, thank you for taking the time to come in and tell the stories of Brynn and Brittany Frace. And I'm sure their family appreciates that.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, and I just want to say to Warren and to Sherry and to Brayden, we love you, and our arms are open for you, and we're all here to help each other through this and to continue to spread their love. And
I think that maybe we should visit this conversation again, maybe next Valentine's Day, depending on where you are, to talk, continue having the conversation about how our love continues for people, even when they've passed. And we'll make the Brynn and Brittany Valentine's show maybe an annual event.
I would love that.
That would be nice. And this has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. You can find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. Like the page and you'll get updates. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can podcast the show through Apple Podcasts. As always, I appreciate your support. I wish for you a happy Valentine's Day and hope that you'll take the time to make a love action step that enhances your life and maybe those of the lives around you. And thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX.